Welcome to the latest March to Match Day here at 92.9 The Game. My name is Jason Longshore, color analyst for the Atlanta United Radio Network. We'll be back in action tomorrow night, 7 p.m. kickoff against Real Salt Lake. Five Stripes Countdown will start with myself and Mike Conti at 6:30 p.m. We'll have a full hour of the full-time report following the final whistle as you're leaving Mercedes-Benz Stadium, hopefully after another win for the Five Stripes. If you missed it, Wednesday night, late night on the West Coast, Atlanta United with a wild 4-3 win over the San Jose Earthquakes, fell down 3-1, even 4-1 for a minute, until VAR intervened. Fourth goal for San Jose was brought back because they had a chance to review a handball incident in the box the other way. It was the first stoppage of play after the handball. Score goes from 4-1 after a Chris Wondolowski goal to 3-2 after a Joseph Martinez penalty. Miguel Almiron equalized at 3-3, and then Joseph Martinez from Miguel Almiron with the winner in the 95th minute. This is the kind of win that can spark a team forward, a very big emotional win in a match that, honestly, the way Atlanta United played did not deserve a result. It was a tough night all the way around, sloppy play, uncharacteristic play from Atlanta United, but they found a way to get it done. And sometimes that heart, that never say die attitude, that can carry you. It did Wednesday night for Atlanta United. Tata Martino talked about that performance after training today at the Children's Healthcare of Atlanta training ground. Not happy with the mistakes, not happy with the overall level of play. He was very happy with the fight back and very happy with the heart shown by his players, but he wants it to be better. You don't want to be in these situations, especially against teams like the San Jose Earthquakes that you should take care of business against. Real Salt Lake will definitely put up a better fight than the San Jose Earthquakes, at least on paper. RSL is in fifth place in the Western Conference on 45 points this season, 25 more than San Jose, with a 13-10-6 record. They've been very good at home at Rio Tinto Stadium, 10-1-4. On the road, not so much, 3-9-2, but they have won their last two on the road, and they're unbeaten in their last four overall. Been a pretty good run of form here lately for Real Salt Lake, and a lot of that is down to the way the attack has been adjusted by Mike Petke, manager for RSL. He struggled to find a consistent goal scorer up top. You had Yura Movsisian, who was waived earlier this year. Young Corey Baird has played and given you some good performances this season. Luis Silva has played in that role some as well, but lately it's been Demir Krylock, a player who has played as a six and a box-to-box midfielder for this team for large stretches of the year. Moving Krylock up top has actually opened things up, and a lot of it is down to the movement that Krylock makes. Coming into the position, primarily playing midfield, he sees the game differently, he thinks of the game differently. Actually, think back to the way Wayne Rooney played up top for DC United against Atlanta United a few weeks ago. Those are the things that Krylock brings to the table. He's going to drop into the midfield, want to combine. That space will be filled sometimes by Albert Rusnak, who plays as the number 10 for RSL, sometimes by the outside players cutting inside, Joel Plata, Jefferson Savarino. Lots of options for this RSL team in the attack, and that kind of multifaceted offense has been a problem for some teams. RSL has not had a problem scoring goals this season, 49 goals on the year. Defensively has been a little more of the issue. They've conceded 47. That is more than any other team in the playoff picture in the Western Conference, more than any other team in the top six in the Eastern Conference as well. And this is something that Real Salt Lake will have to try to upgrade probably in the offseason. It's a young back line, and there are some growing pains that go with it. Brooks Lennon has held down the job on the right side, a converted midfielder, 20 years old. Great going forward, but defensively, he's still learning on the job. Justin Glad, 21 years old. He started every match this season. Good in the air, pretty good passer, but a player that defensively in 1v1 situations, again, needs to show some improvement. Left back has been kind of a work in progress all year long. Danilo Silva finished last season pretty well. He hasn't been able to hold down the job. He's played in 12 matches this year. Aaron Herrera has played there lately. He's played 11 matches this season with 9 starts on the season. DeMar Phillips played some at left back earlier in the year, starting 5 matches. That side has been the weak side for RSL, and it's an opportunity for Atlanta United to attack down their right side, whether that's Julian Gressel overlapping out of the back or out of a wing back position, whether it's Tito Villalba running at speed at that side, whether sometimes it's Ezequiel Barco switching over to that side and running at them with the dribble. That is the weak side for Real Salt Lake, and that will be an opportunity for Atlanta United to try to take advantage of. RSL comes into this drawing last weekend with Minnesota United. Kind of a surprising performance. Minnesota United on the road has been very poor this season. RSL had the chances in the first half. 9-1 they outshot Minnesota, but only one shot was on frame, and that was Demir Krylock's goal. That gives them a lead, but they were unable to keep Minnesota off the board. Darwin Quintero with a late goal as an equalizer. Actually, another goal was waved off after VAR was involved, confirming an offside call. So it finished at 1-1. RSL could have come out of that with a loss. This was on the back of back-to-back 6-goal performances by RSL. 6-2 win over the LA Galaxy at Rio Tinto. A 6-0 win over Colorado Rapids in Colorado. This RSL team was playing with a lot of confidence before the Minnesota match. We'll see how they bounce back. Biggest thing to keep in mind in this one is RSL played their last match last weekend. They did not play in the midweek like Atlanta United did. They didn't have to expend that energy that Atlanta United did in the second half in a big comeback over the Earthquakes. They also didn't have to fly across the country late night, Wednesday night into Thursday morning. Those things are going to have an effect on this match, and it'll be fascinating to see how Tata Martino chooses to attack RSL. Does he try to get an early lead with the limited energy that Atlanta United will have? They will not have the energy that they generally have at home. It will be a challenge. So do they come out and press early and then drop off? Do they do what they did in Columbus on the road, which was on short rest after a match at Yankee Stadium, where they had to expend a lot of energy, this time defensively, in the second half? That match, if you remember, Atlanta came out very patient, very calm in the attack, a lot of build-up play, controlled the possession, limited the opportunities for the opposition, and eventually picked Columbus apart. Does Atlanta take that approach? That's what's so difficult about facing Atlanta United in 2018. You don't know how they're going to approach the match week to week. We've seen them play high energy pressing. We've seen them sit back and soak up pressure. We've seen them control possession and pass and pass and pass to move a team around. We've seen them in a 4-2-3-1 formation. We've seen them in a 3-5-2 formation. Both are potentially on the cards here on Saturday night. I think they will settle into the 4-2-3-1 eventually, because RSL generally plays with one forward up top. If RSL was to pair Corey Baird with Demir Krylock, then you might see three center backs for Atlanta United. But as we saw in San Jose, this is a team that is comfortable in switching in-game from formation to formation, always maintaining that numerical superiority in the back. You want more center backs than the other team has central forwards. Atlanta United would do that again here, I would expect. For Atlanta, will there be some changes to the starting lineup? Darlington Nagbe did not play in San Jose, was not part of the 18. He trained before the match, so he did get a workout, but he was not in the 18 on the match day. He played maybe a few more minutes than expected in Colorado, so you would expect that his absence on Wednesday was geared towards his appearance on Saturday. I would expect to see Darlington Nagbe in the lineup. Does that mean Eric Remedy gets a night off? Does that mean Jeff Lorenowitz gets a night off? Lorenowitz came out at halftime in San Jose. He had an early yellow card. Kind of struggling to find the pace, and with the changes Atlanta had to make, you could opened that up, and they brought on Ezekiel Barco for Jeff Lorenowitz at halftime. Barco did not start either of the two matches on the road trip. He should be pretty fresh. Do you start with him against Real Salt Lake? One thing to keep in mind about Ezekiel Barco, and I know his play is a bit of a conundrum for a lot of people who watch Atlanta United. One thing to keep in mind with his dribbling especially, a lot of people talk about his dribbling across the top of the box and he doesn't beat anybody and he doesn't take a shot. One thing that I noticed a lot in the second half, and I think it was by design in San Jose, when Barco takes off on that dribbling run from left to right across the top of the 18, notice how Atlanta fills that space behind him that he came out of. It creates an opportunity. One, Barco overloads the central channel, and if he dribbles all the way across to the right channel, he overloads that. It also creates a gap behind him. And you see a lot of times Chris McCann, that's when he gets forward looking for a cross. Sometimes you see Miguel Almiron drift out to the left. It really does create a lot of opportunities, and I don't think it's by accident either. This is something that we've seen a lot of teams around the world use, dribbling to move players around, not necessarily to beat a player, to pull a fancy move, to create a shot. It's more about moving the chess pieces, and Barco is very good at doing that. Go back and look at the winning goal for Atlanta United in this. This was a time where Barco did not do that. He had done it multiple times in the second half when he played against San Jose, where he'd dribble left to right and try to create something that way, or just dribble left to right and lay off a simple pass. This time, he didn't. San Jose looked to almost expect it because they started kind of cheating to that side. He's able to play quickly to Miguel Almiron, who makes the run to the left. Almiron then with the cross. Watch those types of things with Atlanta United, because now you're getting into a time period where Atlanta has been together for a long time, even with the new faces with Barco and Nagby and others this season. This system, this style of play, this team strategy has been built for nearly 2 years now. So you have lots of nuance to it. You have lots of subtleties in the system. That's one. There's others in the movement off the ball. There's others in the way they do things to set up space for Julian Gressel to hit across from the right side. There's a lot of things that happen in Atlanta United's build-up play on the dribble, on the passing, to set things up for entry passes from wide positions. Julian Gressel has made great advantage of that this season. Chris McCann, good with his deliveries from the left side. Miguel Almiron, when he drifts out to the left, very good with his deliveries. Actually, in terms of creating chances, Miguel Almiron has been just as good as Julian Gressel in creating chances from wide positions with the cross. Atlanta United is still a work in progress, as any great team is, but watch for these little bits of how they play and how they create opportunities and how they unbalance the opposition. Be curious to see what other changes could happen for Atlanta United. No injuries to report as of yet. Franco Escobar did leave the match in San Jose with an ankle injury, tangled up with Chris Wondolowski in the second half, hobbling after the final whistle as well. We'll see if Escobar is ready to go on short rest. For RSL, keep an eye on that attacking four, Demir Krylock up top, Joao Plata on the right, Jefferson Savarino on the left, Albert Rusnak centrally. They generally play out of the 4-2-3-1. This season, those four players have been their best four players all season. It shows the danger that they have when they go forward. Rusnak with 10 goals, Krylock with 11, Plata with 8, Savarino with 6. All of them can hurt you in different ways. Plata, Savarino, very dangerous on the dribble. Rusnak, good passer, creates a lot of chances, but could score goals himself. Krylock, a little bit more of a big body, but also very savvy movement off the ball. It's that midfielder mentality that he brings to the forward spot. It's different. It can be a challenge. Atlanta United will have to be in sync between their center backs and their central midfield to make sure that Krylock is picked up at all times. Going to be a fun one. Five Stripes Countdown starts at 6:30. From the booth at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, myself and Mike Conti. Kickoff will be just after 7 o'clock. If you're unable to listen to us on 92.9 The Game, you can watch the match with our friends Kevin Egan, Dan Gargan, Jillian Sakovitz on Fox Sports Southeast. And we'll be back. If you're leaving the stadium, if you're at home, you want to keep up with what's going on, we'll be back for the full-time report for an hour after the final whistle on 92.9 The Game. You can also listen on theradio.com and Atlanta United apps. Thanks to everybody for listening to all of our content. We really appreciate it. If you want to get at us on Twitter, tweet at us at Longshoe, at MikeConti929, at ATLSoccer929. We will talk about those tweets in the full-time report. Thanks for listening. Talk to you all tomorrow.